Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Mem Hei Amud Aleph, about 10 lines down by the two dots. The Gemara here is discussing the piece of the Mishnah that says, V'chol yotzim lahatzil, chozrim limkoman. Anybody goes out to save, goes back to their original location. Gemara says, from that statement in the Mishnah, V'afilu tuva, sounds like from the Mishnah you can go back as far as you want. We had a statement before in the Mishnah that says, once a person reaches beyond their tchum, then wherever they are, they gain 2,000 amot in every direction. Then we had the modification or qualification by Rav Shimi Bar Chiya, who said if that overlaps with your original tchum, then you can come back. From the last line in the Mishnah, it sounds like that if you go out to save, then you can return back to your original location, no matter how far away it is from your original location. V'ha Mart Resha, didn't you say earlier in the Mishnah, Alpai Mama V'tulo, that he gets 2,000 amot in every direction from where he is, and no more than that? Sam Rav Yehuda Amarav Shechozrin B'Klei Zayin Limkoman. The heter here, or what's being discussed in this latter piece of the Mishnah, is not about distance, but rather that you're allowed to bring the weapons back with you to the area that you're allowed to walk. So if you can come back to your original tchum, then you can walk with your weapons back to your original tchum. If you have 2,000 amot, you can walk the 2,000 amot with your weapons, meaning that you don't have to drop your weapons out in the field because it would be violating Shabbat to carry the weapons, but you can actually carry those weapons back with you, and that's the dispensation of the Mishnah over here, is that you're allowed to carry these weapons back, not just walk back through the tchum in that way. My kushya, dimma lahatzil shiny. Why do you have to create a contradiction within the Mishnah? Maybe we can reconcile the Mishnah by simply saying the Mishnah is talking about two different cases. In the earlier part of the Mishnah about the 2,000 amot, there's a case where you have permission to leave the tchum, but it's not lahatzil. It's not a case where you're going out to save. Whereas the last case in the Mishnah, where it says you can go back to your original location, is a case of lahatzil shiny. It's a case that when you went out to save, there you will be entitled to come back. Ela ikasha hakasha. So the Gemara accepts that distinction, but says, but if that's the case, this is our question. D'tanan. We have a Mishnah. Barishona lo yuzazim misham kolayom kulo. When the Edim, who came to testify about the new moon, when they reached Yerushalayim, when they reached the Beit Din HaGadol, once they got there, they wouldn't be able to move from that location. They left home. Now they are stuck wherever they are, and they only get Dalet Amot in every direction. Hitkin Rabbi Gamliel HaZakein Sheyesh Lam Alpayim HaMalachol Ruach. Rabbi Gamliel HaZakein said, this is crazy. If we do this, nobody's going to come to Yerushalayim. Nobody's going to want to testify. So he granted them Tchum. Now when they came to this Beit Din, once they're finished, they got 20,000 Amot in every direction. V'lo Elu Bilvad Amru. Ela, that it's not only said about this case of Eidot HaChodesh, but including Afilu Chochma Haba Leleit, a midwife who comes to help a woman give birth. V'aba Latzil Min HaGayis, or someone who comes out to save from an army that is attacking. U'min HaNahar, or from a river that's overflowing. Min HaMapolet, from an avalanche. Min HaDleika, from a fire. Hari Hein Ke'anshei Ha'ir. They become like the people of the city. And they get 2,000 amot in every direction. So you see this Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah does not distinguish or make any distinction between Lahatzil and any other case. In all these cases, wherever they end up, these individuals, they get 2,000 amot in every direction. Vitulo, and that's it. Vaha Amart. Our Mishnah says, Kol Yotzim Lahatzil Chozrim Limkoman Afilu Tuva. From our Mishnah, it sounds like these people can go back to their original location no matter how far it is. Amar Rav Yehuda Marav, Shechozrin, B'Klei Zayin Limkoman. On that, we give the answer of Rav Yehuda Marav, that those people that go out that seal, not only can they return up to 2,000 amot, or they get the 2,000 amot from wherever they stop, or wherever the battle is finished, and now they want to return, but they can also take their weapons with them. They don't have to drop their weapons out in the field. Kedetanya, we have a braita that supports that understanding of Yehuda Marav. Berishona, ayu menichim klei zainan bevayit asmuch l'chumah. Originally, when they returned from battle, they used to all deposit their weapons at the gatekeeper's house or some house that was on the edge of the city in order that they'd be ready next time they have to leave the city. The enemies realized what they were doing, that they were returning to the city and leaving their weapons out there. And then they started to chase after them. And then they went into this house to grab out their weapons to run out. And the enemies were chasing them. When they were racing to get their weapons, they ended up bumping into each other and stomping on each other, trampling, stampeding each other, and they ended up killing amongst themselves from their own push to grab the weapons more than the enemies were able to kill amongst them. At that time, or that period, they made a takana that from wherever they finished the battle, wherever they return to, they can take their weapons all the way home, so they should be prepared in order to go back out again in case the enemy attacks. Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak Amar Lo Kasha. So here's an alternative answer to this stira. The question is, who won the battle? If the Jews won the battle, if Israel won the battle, then we say they get 2,000 amot in every direction, and that's it. Here it's a lashon sagi nohar, but a case where Bnei Israel lost the battle, over there they're granted more space to run back because they can't stay there. They're fleeing the battle. They can't just stay around and be stuck with the 2,000 amot there. They need to return further back to their city, back to safety. So that's the way Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak resolved this stira. Now, this Gemara is instrumental, pivotal, in a tshuva from Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe in the Igrot Moshe in Or HaChaim Chelek Dalet Siman Pei discusses, based on this Gemara, he has a novel, almost incredulous explanation of this Gemara. And based on this, he creates what's called the Hatzolah Heter. Rav Moshe is basically Mechadesh in order to reconcile our Gemara as well as the Steer in the Rambam and other issues that came up in the Sugya, and says that there is a difference in the perspective of the individual who is heading out to do the saving. If the person who's going out to save thinks that they're going to be there for a long duration, then Chazal were not matir them to come back home afterwards. They were matir them to have the 2,000 amot around them, because there's no reason that they should be, quote-unquote, punished with regards to an Isur Derabanan. It never existed that Isur Derabanan with regards to someone like that. And they're entitled to their 2,000 amot, even though they went out of the tchum, because they went out of the tchum with permission. But since when they left their house, they had in mind, or they knew the possibility that they could be there for a long duration, there's no reason to believe that if we don't allow them to come home, that they wouldn't come in the future. On the other hand, if someone is going out to deal with an issue that is only momentary or will take a short while, and their expectation is that we'll come home, and they can return home afterwards, if we don't allow them to return in those situations, then in the future, they will reconsider their willingness to go. Because if we don't allow them to come back, then why would they go for an hour worth of work or hours worth of saving and then be stuck there for the remainder of the day? And because of that, Moshe differentiates on the perspective of the individual's going out to save. Based on that, he's willing to be matir, even isurim de'oraita, even Torah laws, for an individual to return from the site of Hatzalat Nefashot, because of the fear that if we don't let them do that, in the future they will not act in an expedient manner, or they won't be as willing to go and do this. Because of that, he allows doctors to drive back home after an event, even if there involves an Isur D'Oraita, or for Hatzalah to return from a call after they are finished, especially in cases where the individual might be called upon again, or might be needed again, then they should return home. Just to note that both Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach and the Tzitzi Eliezer both had Rav Moshe's tshuva, and they both disagree with it. They both say that, as far as our Gemara is concerned, the only thing they were matir was Yisurei Derabanan, but not Yisurei De'oraita. And therefore, only Yisurei Derabanan can be violated to allow a person to return home. And we worry about them being mitrashel, but not Yisurim De'oraita. The Tzitz Eliezer says, Kvar Hore Rav Moshe, and that if you want to be Somech on him, he is worthy to be Somech on, but he himself does not subscribe to it. And he said the best thing a doctor can do in these situations is have scheduled hours at home sometime on the Shabbat, so that it forces him to return, because there might be a Pikuach Nefesh in this situation over the hours that he has to see people at home afterwards. And that could help you with allowing this heter of Rav Moshe. Now then, Rav Shlomo Zalman believes that Rav Moshe is completely wrong about this, and he's unwilling to be matir isurim de'oraita for an individual to return back home. While Rav Shlomo Zalman does bring some evidence to position of Rav Moshe, nevertheless, one of his biggest issues with Rav Moshe's position is the fact that we do not find anywhere in Chazal that they're choshesh, that a person will be mitrashel, that a person will be lazy or not expedient in saving another individual because we don't let them come home. There are other instances where we worry about people making mistakes in sekanat nefashot, being machmir on themselves, not doing what's necessary for sekanat nefashot because they're afraid of violating the Shabbat. But we never find it the other way around, which is that if we prevent someone or stop them from violating the Shabbat, that then in the future they will be lazy or reticent to do that sekanat nefashot. And so because of that, he disagrees with the underlying principle of Rav Moshe that that type of chashash could allow or create a dispensation for Isurei De'oraita. Again, even though he finds some instances where we do have support for Rav Moshe's position, But in general, we do not find that. And all Haterim, with regards to Sakanat Nefashot, are because we're afraid of the opposite. The people will be Machmir on the Yisurim of Shabbat or the Yisurim of Yom Kippur, and they won't take care of the Pikuach Nefesh as necessary. So therefore, we force everybody to violate it or violate the Yisurim D'oraita to ensure that the Pikuach Nefesh is handled properly. Again, Rav Moshe's explanation of the Gemara is in a big chiddush. He does it because there are problems in the current explanation of the Gemara and exactly how to balance between the different types of Hatzalot Nefeshot. Nevertheless, both the Tzitzelis and more extensively Rosh Shlomo Zalman try to explain away those issues and disagree with Rav Moshe's conclusion. Amar Yehuda Marav, Nachrim Shetzaru al Yerot Yisrael, non-Jews that laid siege to a Jewish city, En Yotzim Aleim B'Klei Zainan, we don't go out to battle with them with weapons, Ve'en Mechalim Aleim Ta Shabbat, they don't violate Shabbat to protect the city. Tanya Nami Ochi, we have a brighter that supports that, Nachrim Shetzaru V'chule, but then we have qualification to that, Bamed V'im Rumim K'sher Bo'u Al Yiskei Mamon, if the issue is a monetary issue, they're coming to either extract taxes, money, extort money from the people, that's the case. If they're coming about issues of life and death, then you'd see Malay Mglezainan, then you go out with weapons and you attack or you defend the city. And you're allowed to be Mechalel Shabbat to protect the city. And if it's a city on the border, even if they're coming for monetary issues, you're allowed to go out to battle, or you're allowed to defend the city even on Shabbat. Because if this city falls, it'll live a breach in the border, and will open up or expose cities that are beyond that. Ela, if they come, even Aliskei Tevin Vikash, on things that are meaningless, straw and stubble. Yotzin Aleim Mekle Zainon Mechalin Aleit HaShabbat. Then you go out to battle with them, and you Mechalel Shabbat in order to protect the border. Amar Rav Yosef Bar Yume, Amar Rav Nachman, Ubavel Giras Muchal Sapar. And Bavel, the Jewish community in Bavel, is like a city on the border. Kiras Mukhal Sapar Damya, it's like the Jewish community in Bavel is like a city on the border. Targuma Narada. And the explanation of that is about the city of Narada, because on one side of the city of Narada were non-Jewish settlements, on the other side or internal to that were the Jewish settlements. So Narada was a buffer between the Jewish and non-Jewish settlements, and therefore Narada takes on this status of a border city, and it can protect, whether it be Mechalel Shabbat or even Aliskei Mamon, it protect itself so it doesn't expose the other Jewish cities. Darish Rabbi Dustai, the Minberi, Maidich Div, what is meant in the Pasuk in Shmuel Aleph when it says, Vaygidu leDavid leMor, David receives news, V'hinei Plishtim nilchamim b'kila, Plishtim are fighting in Kila, V'heima shosim et agranot, and they are plundering, tearing apart the threshing floors. So Tana, Kila, Iras Muchal Saparaita. Kila was a border city. Vehem lo bo el eskei tevin vikash. And they only came in on issues dealing with straw, stubble, because we see they went after the threshing floors. Dichtiv. Vehem shosim et agranot. Uchtiv. And the subsequent pasuk says, Vayishal David b'ashem lemor. David asks Hashem, Hayelich vikiti b'plishtim ha'ele. Should I go and attack these plishtim? Vayom Hashem el David. Lech vikita b'plishtim. Voshat et kila. Go ahead and attack the plishtim and save Kila. Makami Baile. What was David asking of Hashem? Ilei ma ishari yasur. Was he asking them whether it was permissible or not permissible to go to battle? Hare Beit Dino Shul Shmuel Aramati Kayam. The Beit Din of Shmuel Aramati is there. And as Rashi points out, that midei the Isser Veheter. If it has to do with Isser Veheter, you go to Beit Din. You don't go to the Urim Vitumim to discuss Isser Veheter. It's a question, are you permitted to go to battle? Not permitted to go to battle? That you go to Shmuel for. But that can't be what he was asking about. Eloi matzlach ilo matzlach. He was asking God whether he was going to succeed in battle or not succeed in battle. Deganami, that is meduyak in the words of the Pasukim, because dichtiv, lech vikita b'plishtim v'oshat et kila. That go attack the plishtim and you will save kila. The answer was, go and attack because you will be successful, shmamina. Now how does this help us in our situation? Here, it's a situation where it's only monetary issue based on the Gemara's derusha of the Pasukim, and yet David still goes out to battle. But our cases are digging at cases of Shabbat. So Tosafot and Rashi both say that the fact that David went to battle over a monetary issue and was willing to sacrifice his life, put his life in danger in order to do that, it shows you that this was an important enough issue. And if you can go to battle because of this issue, then you can go to battle on Shabbat. The permissibility of going to battle should be indifferent between a weekday and Shabbat if you're going to put your life in danger. That's an interesting concept. We won't get into it now. But every battle, anytime you go to war, it involves Safik Nevashot, Minchat Chinuch, and others discuss this as to whether that can be a heter for anything with regards to war. War inherently involves Safik Nevashot, And therefore, that should not be a consideration whenever it comes to war, because that is part of war. If you have to go to war, then obviously you're involving Safek Nevashot. So it's not exactly clear why over here, just because David is going to put his life at risk to do this, automatically means you mean Michalal Shabbat. But Rashi and Tosafot both think that the fact that David went to battle over this shows you it's an important enough issue. If it's an important enough issue, then it would apply even to Shabbat, and you would be allowed to go to battle on Shabbat. Okay, next Mishnah. Mi sheyashav baderech, someone who settled down on the way and didn't realize where he was settling down. Then, v'amad v'ra'ah, v'ayu samoch l'ir. He gets up, and all of a sudden he realizes he's right near the city. Ho'el v'lo hayta kavanato l'kach, lo yikanes divrei Rabbi Meir. Since this was not his intent, when he sat down, he rested, he's waiting there, gets dark, Shabbat starts. So he assumes his shvito is going to be exactly where he is. Afterwards, he gets up, he looks around, and realizes he's near the city. Rabbi Meir says, too bad. You didn't know you were within the area or the tchum of the city, therefore you had no intent to be with the city. If that's the case, you get 2,000 amot from where you are, you do not join the city or become a part of the city for tchum. Rabbi Yehuda Meir, yikanes, he goes into the city and he becomes like the city. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, maase haya v'nichnas Rabbi Tarfon below mitkavein. At a case like this with Rabbi Tarfon, and he went into the city and considered himself to be one of the members of the city and the tchum of the city. Tanya, we have a bright. Amar Yehuda Masib Rabbi Tarfon. Shayam Aleich Baderech. Rabbi Yehuda is quoting this incident with Rabbi Tarfon. He was traveling. Vashchalo. It got dark. Shabbat came in. Velan. And so then he stayed where he was. Chutz Leir. The Shacharit. In the morning, Matzau. Roe Bakar. Some shepherds found him out in the field. Amrulo Rebbe. Hare Yir Lefanecha. There's a city right here. Why are you staying out in the field? Hikanes. Go in. Nichnas. He went in. V'yashab Bebei Midrash. V'derash Goleyam Golo. He went to the Bebei Midrash. And it gave drashot, it gave shirim all day long. Amrulo, whether this is a generic Amrulo to Rabbi Yehuda, or the other girsa in the Shultot is Amrulo Rabbi Akiva, Misham Raya, how can you bring a proof from that? Shema Bilobo Haita. Number one, maybe Rabbi Tarfon had in mind to have his shvita with the city, even though he stopped outside the city. We don't have any indication as to whether he knew or didn't know about the city. Or, Beit Midrash Muvla B'toch Tuchumo Haya. How do you know the Beit Midrash was beyond his tchum? Maybe the Beit Midrash was within the 2,000 amot of wherever he slept, and that's why he went to the Beit Midrash. Not because he was a member of the city, and therefore he was able to go to the Beit Midrash. Maybe it had nothing to do with that. So there's no proof from this story of Rabbi Tarfon to your position. Next Mishnah. Mi sheyashan baderech liyadash ha-sheicha. Someone fell asleep on the way, and the sun set while he was sleeping. Unbeknownst to him, the sun sets, and Shabbat starts. Yesh lo apayim amalachol ruach, divrei Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says you get 2,000 amot every direction. That becomes your shvita. He only gets 4 amot because he was not aware when he went to sleep that he was going to sleep through Shabbat, and therefore he had no intent for shvita. If there's no intent for shvita, then he has no shvita, and he only gets his 4 amot because he didn't plan to stay there. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, v'hu b'emtzan. When he gets 4 amot, he's in the center of those 4 amot. We saw that Rabbi Eliezer l'tamei in the end of yesterday's daf. And that means that he gets 2 amot in every direction. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Leizer Ruach Shiyotze Yelich. He can pick. He has 4 amot, and he can pick to whichever direction that he wants to go. Omod the Rabbi Yehuda, but Rabbi Yehuda agrees, Shim Bayer Lo, once he picks which direction the 4 amot are in, Shein Yochol Achzor Bo, then he can't retract that or repeal that. Whatever he picks, those are his 4 amot. Hayu Shnayim. If there were 2 individuals who stuck out in the field, Miktzat Amotav Shel Zeh B'toch Amotav Shel Zeh, they each have 4 amot each, and they have an overlap between them of some of those amot. Mevin ochlim b'emtza. Then they can bring the food to the middle point where they overlap. And in that overlap area, v'achelo yitzu zeh mitoch shelo l'toch shel chaveiro. As long as you don't take from your area to the area that you couldn't reach before. Since the possessions of an individual have the same shvita as him, if these 2 individuals only have their 4 amot wherever they are, for whatever reason, a portion of their 4 amot overlap, and a portion of them the other person can't reach. So they have about 6 amot between them, and if their 4 amot is in the direction of each other, then in that case, the 2 middle amot, they overlap. The 2 outer amot, each one can't go to the other one. So there in those middle overlapping amot, they can bring their food and enjoy it together. But if one person, Reuven, brings food, Shimon can't take it back to his other 2 amot. And Shimon brings food, Reuven can't bring it back. They can only utilize their things in that joint area if they want to use them together. Hayu shlosha. If there are 3 of them, and the middle one overlaps with the both of them, meaning that there is a person with the middle, and then he has 2 amot overlap with the person to his east, and he has 2 amot overlap with the person to his west, then, He can interact with each person on his east or west, and the same with them with him. But the two outer people cannot interact with each other. So if the eastern person has food, he can share it with the middle person on their overlap area. If the western person has food, he can share that with the middle person on their overlap area. But the person with the food on the eastern side can't pass it over to the western side, even through the middle. Because again, the items and the possessions of the individual have the same tchum as that individual. Rashi over here explains that the objects of an individual are found in his dalat amot, or like him, and the dalat amot of the individual is like a reshut yachid. He can't move from inside his reshut yachid to outside of that area, or that perimeter that he has of his dalat amot, because it's like a reshut yachid. And so too, with interacting with other individuals, they have a din of reshut yachid. Even though earlier in the Masechta we talked about the fact that if someone takes a shvitah outside the city, and then he counts his 2,000 amot, and it ends in the middle of the city, that even though he can't go beyond that point, the objects that he has can go beyond that point, and it can be carried around there. Why? Why isn't that limited to the area that is considered to be his tchum? Because over there, when it comes to the 2,000 amot of an individual, the Chachamim didn't give that the distinction of being a reshut yachid. That's the area that a person can walk. If he wants to move his object beyond that, that's fine. Because as long as he's in the same reshut, when in the city it's all one reshut, that's fine. But with regards to the four amot that are directly around the individual, that is classified as a reshut hayachid, and therefore you can't interact with items inside or outside of that. What is this similar to? You have three chatzerot that are open to each other, meaning that they are adjacent to each other along a line. And each one of them has an opening into the Reshut Rabim. Each outer one made an Eruv with the middle one. The outer ones can interact with the middle Chatzer, and the middle Chatzer can interact with them. But the two outer Chatzerot cannot interact with each other. So again, if you have the middle Chatzer, items that are there can be taken from the middle Chatzer to the eastern Chatzer, from the middle chatzer to the western chatzer, because they have an eruv between them. What cannot happen is that the eastern chatzer has items that are brought into the middle, and then from the middle to the western chatzer. They can't move all the way to the other chatzer, because the outer two chatzerot don't have an eruv between them. So that's a very similar case, or an example, of what happened with these three individuals. The same thing happens with the chatzerot. Just like these individuals, their possessions are like them for Shvitah. So too, the objects that are found in the chatzer have the same din as the chatzer. And so, therefore, whoever has an Eruv, or the overlap, can interact, and whoever doesn't, cannot. What is the reasoning behind Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's position? Does he believe that unowned objects are Kone Shvita wherever they are, and they have 2,000 amot in every direction? And so too, this sleeping individual. Dinhu, Dilifloog Bekelim. And he could have argued about Kelim, not just an individual. Vahad the Mivlege Adam. So why do they mention Adam? Lo Diacha Kochan de Rabbanan. Teach you the power of the position of Rabbanan. Dava gav the Eagle Maimar Hol Veneur Kana. Had he been awake, he would have been Kone Shvita. Yeshan Namikana, that's when he's sleeping, he should also be Kone, Kamash Vlan, that we don't say that. Is that the reasoning behind Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri? A person who's sleeping is no worse than unowned objects. And just like unowned objects get a Shvita from wherever they are, this sleeping individual gets a Shvita from wherever he is. Or, Dilma Kasar Yochanan ben Nuri, Ba'alma Chefzei Efker, Ein Konim Shvita. In general, unowned objects do not acquire a position where they are. And what's the reasoning here? Hovenayur kana, since when he's awake he would be kone. Yashan nami kana, if he's sleeping he's also kone. But obviously the Chachamim would disagree with that. What's interesting here is when the Gemara mentions the possibility that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri holds that it's hefker, and the reason that they are arguing about people and not kelim is to tell you the power of the Chachamim. Why don't we say let them argue about kelim and teach you the position of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri? That Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says even by kelim that they are kone shvita, and that would be lekula. And generally we say koach de etera adif. So we should better off arguing about the kelim than the person. So Tosfot says over here, v'yesh lamar hadoganu le shvita lav kuloi. See, by the person, if he's kone shvita, it actually turns out to be a kula, because now he gets 2,000 amot. If he's not kone shvita, then he only gets 4 amot in each direction. On the other hand, by kelim, it turns out to be just the opposite. By kelim, if they're Kone Shvita, they're limited to 2,000 amot in every direction from where they were coming into Shabbat. If they're not Kone Shvita, then whoever takes ownership of them first, they become like that individual. So it's actually a Chumrah if the Kelim are Kone Shvita. And that's why the Gemara focused on arguing about the person who's sleeping and not the Kelim. Because for Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, by Kelim, having them be Kone Shvita is actually a Chumrah. And from this, Tosfot says, shows that people and Kelim have different dinim with regards to Kenyan Shvita and Erev Chumin. Amar Rav Yosef, Tashma, Kishamim She'ardu Me'erev Yom Tov, rain that falls on Erev Yom Tov, Yesh Lehem Apayim Mamah L'chol Ruach, has 2,000 amot in each direction, because they were going to Shvita when Yom Tov came in. Be Yom Tov, the rain falls on Yom Tov, Harayim Geragle Goladam. Then they have the din of whoever is kona them first, then that's what the rain acquires as their Shvita. If Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri's reason in our Mishnah is because unknown objects are kona Shvita, so to the sleeping individual, Hamani, then the author of this Braita is Rabbi Yochanan he. Because here we have a case where if the rain falls on Erev Yom Tov, it's kona Shvita. If Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri believes that Chefze Efker, unowned objects, are not Kone Shvita, and the whole reason here is because if he was awake, he was Kone Shvita, so too when he's asleep, Hamani, who's the author of this Braita? Lo Rabbi Yochanan, velo Rabbanan. It's neither Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri nor the Rabbanan. Nobody thinks Chefze Efker are Kone Shvita. Yotiv Abayi v'kamer lo lahay shmaitado. Abayi was saying over what his Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef, said. Amalei Rav Safra lo Abayi. So Rav Safra challenged Abayi and says, V'dilma, kshamim asmuchim le'ir askinan. Maybe we're talking about a rain that was close to the city. And the people of the city had their mind on the rain, and that's why they have a tchum. Not because they were unowned objects and they are kone shvita. That can't be the case. Ditznan, we have a Mishnah. Borsho yachid, geragle yachid. Water that's in a private cistern, that water has the din like the owner of that cistern and can only go as far as the owner goes. Bisholo ta'ir. And water that's found in the city bore a cistern in that city, geragle ta'ir. They have a tchum of the people of the city, meaning the 2,000 amot from the city all around. Shalei Bavel, when it comes to public wells that were available to anybody who was out there, Raglei Hamimalei, whoever fills them up, they acquire the home of whoever takes them first. Vitanya, but we have another bright that says Borsho Shvatim, which is equivalent to the Bor of Olei Bavel. Yesh Lein Alpayim Amalecho Ruach. They have 2,000 amot in each direction. So here we have a stira, Kashina Dodi. The bright and this Mishnah do not reconcile. One case we say Borsho Bavel has the tchum of whoever draws the water first. And the other case we say that they have 2,000 amot from wherever the boar is found. Elam Shma Mina, Ha Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri, Ha Rabbanan. The easy way to reconcile is to say Rabbi Yochanan Ben Nuri believes Chefze Hefker Arkonim Shvita. So these unowned wells of Olei Bavel, they have 2,000 amot in each direction. They're Chefze Hefker. The other Mishnah that we quoted before is the Rabbanan, who say that Chefze Hefker are not Konim Shvita, and therefore whoever draws them first, that's whose tchum they are governed by. So that's clear that Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri believes that Chefze Hefker are Konim Shvita, and that must be the explanation of the case of the Gishamim. Yatagam e Rav Yosef, when Abayi returned to his Rebbe Rav Yosef, this is what Rav Safra challenged me with, and this is how I responded to him. Rav Yosef says back to him, you could prove it to him from the case of the Gishamim itself. If we're talking about rain that is near the city, and people of the city had the rain in mind, and that's why they have a shvita there, and they have a tchum, why does it say that they have 2,000 amot in every direction? Then the Braita should have said that the rain that's there before Yom Tov has a din like the people of the city. That's not what it says. It says that it has a din of 2,000 amot in each direction. Which means that the reason that that's the case is because Chefze Hefker, like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, or because Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri thinks Chefze Hefker are Konim Shvita, and not because the people of the city had them in mind. Should have said that they follow the distance of the people, or the home of the people of the city. The fact that it doesn't say that proves to you that we're talking about an issue of Chefze Hefker Konim Shvita, and it's authored by Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Amamar, b'yom tov arayen geragle kol adam. If the rain falls on Yom Tov, they have the chum of whoever gets to them first. V'amai, liknei shvita bokyanus. They should have shvita from where they derived, which is from the ocean. Lema, talog Rabbi Eliezer. Let's say that this breita is not like Rabbi Eliezer. Dig Rabbi Eliezer, amar, olam kulo mimei okyanus ushote. That the whole world, the rain comes from the okyanus. The clouds go over the ocean. They take the water and then they deposit it on the area. So they came from the ocean, according to Rabbi Eliezer. That's the case. Going to Yom Tov, they had Shvita in the ocean. So why aren't they governed by the tchum of where they were in the ocean? I'm Rabbi Yitzchak. Halcha b'avim shenigashu me'erev Yom Tov. Case where the clouds already formed before Yom Tov, and they were out of the ocean. Askinan v'dilma anach azli v'anach achrina. How do you know it's the same clouds? Maybe these clouds moved on, and these are new clouds. Di'idleyu simanu b'gavayu. He knew he had a sign or siman in these clouds, and it was the same clouds. When it comes to suffik derabonon, we go to hakel. Even though it's a davar sheish lo matirin, which generally, even in derabonans, we say wait until it's mutar. Nevertheless, here by eruv in general, we are makil, and so too over here we're going to be makil. Mar says velikne shvita bavim. Okay, so it wasn't in the ocean; it was in the clouds coming into yom tov. Why don't they have shvita up in the clouds? Tifshom inah. The fact that we don't see that, let us conclude the ain't tchumim lamal miyud. A question that we addressed before. Maybe there's no tchumim above 10 tvachim. Tesh yesh tchumim likne shvita bavim. Because if there is tchumim above 10 tvachim, then why don't they kone shvita up in the clouds? Olam emelecha yesh tchumim. There is tchumim above 10 tvachim. Umaya be'iva mivlo bliye. The water in the clouds is completely absorbed. It's not visible there. And that's why it's not kone shvita. Gemara goes, oh my gosh, if that's the case, koshkein davalu nolad. You have a bigger problem. If the rain doesn't exist before Yom Tov, then it's nolad, and Yom Tov's a problem with mukset. Forget about tchum, you have a problem with mukset, and it's even a bigger issue. The Syrian, that would be asur. Ela mayim ba'avim midnad naidi. The water in the clouds moves. And since it moves, it's never kone shvita. It's always moving. It's always in motion. Similar to what we discussed before about the boat, since it's always in motion, it's as if it never is kone shvita in Dalet Amot, according to the first explanation in Rashi. So to hear, the clouds are always moving, so they're never really kone shvita. Or it says, hashta dakti dahochi, if you got this far, okeanos nami lolik shelach, then the motion itself's not a problem. May okeanos nami midei naidei. The water in the ocean is always moving, constantly moving, and therefore it's not kone shvita. Tosafot over here notes that the fact that the rain coming out of the clouds is nolad is interesting, because juices that are absorbed in fruits. Fruits out, the juices on Shabbat technically would be mutar. They wouldn't be a problem, no lad. We have a gzeira of Shemi Yischot, so we don't let you take that juice. How is that different than the clouds? But that's what it says. The water absorbed in the clouds is much more absorbed than that is in the fruits. And therefore, it's much more of a case of no lad than it is from a derivative of a fruit. It's a derivative of the fruit. It's as if it's an extension of the fruit, and therefore it's not mukse versus the nolad from the clouds. And even though, in general, we know that Rabbi Shimon doesn't have a din of mukse, so maybe that could be the case over here. Tosfot says over here, and we have this in many places, that even though he does not hold of mukse, by things like nolad, which is a completely new thing, davar chadash legamri, which Tosfot claims this rain is, over there he will agree that there is a din of mukse. Okay, we'll stop over here.